Please join me in Revelation chapter 21. As you turn there, I welcome all who gather tonight, and gather in the name of the Lord. Many of you, most of you are familiar faces. It's a pleasure to join with people of like precious faith. Also a pleasure to see less familiar faces, and I hope we can encourage one another toward heaven. I want to remind you of two likely responses to the book called Revelation. I think we tend to ignore it or obsess over it. Maybe not us. We may manage to find a good middle ground, but somewhere in the world are seven people who claim to be religious, and yet they ignore this book. And of course, in doing so, they forfeit the encouragement available in it. But similarly, there are another seven people, and they're lurking somewhere in a corner, probably talking to each other, and they obsess over the book, and they concoct elaborate stories and narratives that explain their take on this book, and they get lost in their own musings. Of course, you can see that each of those approaches is less than desirable, and I want to stake a claim on a certain portion of Revelation tonight and see if we can find something that can help us walk out of here encouraged, boosted in our sense that we have power and we have a place and a part in something that is large and grand and wondrous. That's at least my goal, and I hope that we can accomplish it together. I hope you understand that it'll take your work as well. I can do my part, but you need to join me in considering this language. So please do so now. In the opening verses of chapter 21 of Revelation, I want to establish a neighborhood from which we will do our strolling in just a moment. Beginning in verse 1 of chapter 21 of Revelation, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away.' And he who was seated on the throne said, 'Behold, I am making all things new.' Also he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.' And he said to me, 'It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death.' Then came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues and spoke to me, saying, 'Come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb.' And he carried me away in the spirit to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, its radiance like a most rare jewel." I'm going to stop there and skip ahead now to chapter 22 and extend our neighborhood just a bit. In chapter 22 now, please join me in verse 1. "Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, through the middle of the street of the city. Also on either side of the river, the tree of life, with its 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be anything accursed, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads, and night will be no more. They will need no light or lamp or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. I guess we could take one encouragement there by noting, at least if you're youngsters, the name on the forehead. Yes, it must be a tattoo. Tell your parents, it's okay, you've got biblical warrant for it. I'm going to show you three pairings of verses from this neighborhood, partly from what I've read, but a couple from nearby places, all here in Revelation. I want you to see how these pairs tell us something about this occasion. I hope they'll tell us things we can take with us and ponder as the week goes along and benefit from that pondering. I recognize the presence of the pairs, you see, and from that repetition, I take significance. I think the writer has given us something twice in order to emphasize what matters to him much. So let me begin. I want to show you actually two places that kind of frame what I've just read. Go down with me now in chapter 22 in verse 8. It's slightly past where we stopped. In verse 8, and see this first of a pairing that I want us to consider and perhaps find encouragement there. I, John, am the one who heard and saw these things. It is a book of revealings, after all. It is Revelation. And he reported, I saw, and here he said, I'm the one who saw it. And when I heard and saw them, I fell down to worship at the feet of the angel who showed them to me. But he said to me, you must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you and your brothers, the prophets, and with those who keep the words of this book. Worship God. Go back with me to chapter 19, a little bit back, not too far. 19, and then verse 10. 19:10 in Revelation still. And here I see this. Then I fell down at his feet to worship him, but he said to me, you must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you and your brothers who hold the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. Come now. You join me in seeing the similarities. You cannot read those two passages without seeing how similar they are. So let's think about that similarity and take some courage from it, some comfort. One, here is this writer, John, this one who is given the revealing, the one who has shown these astonishing sights, and his first response is to worship. But he messes up twice. I don't know about you, but I'm always glad to see Bible people mess up. It makes me understand that I can mess up too. Here's a guy who gets the revealing. It's straight to him. He gets his own personal angel showing him astonishing things. And he tries to worship the angel twice. And notice the correction each time. It's the similarity is this. One, the angel says, I'm your fellow servant. Not just with you, but with those who keep the testimony or those who keep the words of this book. I'm with you. And then here's the correction. Two words. Worship God. Now, what John has done, we can do. We might want to fall at the feet of somebody and worship them, but we might be more likely to fall at the feet of our own understanding and worship our understanding of God. But I would remind you what we see here, the stern, terse admonition of the angel. Don't do this. Worship God. It's possible to mess up, as John has done, but it's also possible to be corrected and be reminded. And if we'll read Revelation chapter 19 and chapter 22, we can be encouraged to be careful to worship God and not something else. Now, that may seem too obvious to you, but let me assure you, there are millions of people who believe they're worshiping God and they're not. And if we think we're immune to that somehow, we only delude ourselves, and you need the encouragement of this passage tonight. Understand it. We can be ready to fall at the feet of anyone. Now, you can say, how is that encouraging to be reminded of how careless we can be and how wrong we could be? I'm encouraged to know that I'm not the first to do it. I'm encouraged to know that there is a simple answer. Redirect. Worship God. Oh, redirect. That sounds like school teacher advice, doesn't it? Worship God. Now, there's a second part related to this, and this is what I find beautiful. That also find strange. I have to wrestle with this. My mind is not well coached, well trained to understand this. The angel says, don't worship me. I'm your fellow servant. We have allies that are angels. Well, that's kind of fun to know. But I don't know what to do with that. But I'm going to take it. In a sense, I'm going to be reminded of the servant who was with Elisha. And he tells Elisha, look, we're surrounded by an army. There's not much hope here. And Elisha's answer is, there's more on our side than there are on theirs. And he prays to God and he's revealed chariots of fire. Let us be encouraged by someone else's mistake. And let us be encouraged by this alliance that is ours. We're not alone. In fact, John uses similar language in the opening of this book. In chapter 1, verse 9, I believe it is, in Revelation, John says, I, John, your brother and fellow partaker with you. I want you to know you're not in this alone. Get it lined up right, and then you can worship God. I invite you to see the possibilities of thinking that way. Secondly, I want to call your attention to a passage that I did read. And you'll have to help me find it. It is the one that where John says, or he hears, yes, here in 21:6. My second source of encouragement comes from listening to what the report of this fellow who messes up so readily. But he tells me here, the report I got is this angel said to me, the one who's seated on the throne says this in verse 6. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly, well, I'm not going to finish reading that list. You can read that list. I'm encouraged to know that there's going to be a sorting. Notice there's a hinge in this passage on the word but. Following the but, the list starts of the bad-doing people who are going to be left to the lake of fire. Well, how is that encouraging? Because that's not a necessary fate. Each of the things listed there, each of those people, are those things by choice. And they will get the fate of the choices they make. But that's not the necessary choice. Remember, the woman at the well is met by Jesus, and he says to her, I've got water for you, water that springs up to eternal life. And she has to be taught how to think about that. You mean I don't have to come back here? She has to be led to see this a new way. And I want you to see what here we're told this. To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. It's there and it's free. If you're not encouraged by that, talk to me after service. There's room here to read that and say, there's going to be a sorting. But there's a good side to the sort. And I can be on that side. I hope you can join me in that. And I hope you can see, in fact, there's a second place. I believe it's in I'm embarrassed. It's not coming to my mind here. I'll have you looking. People in class help me all the time. I'll call it. There is a second place where the same language is used, the Alpha and the Omega. And well, I'm embarrassed. It's not coming to me. Pardon me? 21:13. Thank you for your help. There it is. It's in red letters. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Again, the similar language, direct repetition of the language, but he goes on. Blessed are those who wash their robes so that they might have the right to the tree of life, and that they may enter the city by the gates. It's not water this time, it's a tree. And remember in the early part of this chapter, the tree of life yields its fruit each month, and the leaves are for the healing of the nations. That's what's offered in this instance. It's a different offering, but it's a very clear offering. You have something awaiting you, and it's pretty good. And then, look at that next word. Verse 15 begins, outside. And then there's another list. The list is not exactly the same, but it's fairly strong correspondence with the other list. So you see the paired statements, Alpha and Omega, I've got something good to offer you, and then there's a list. Right? The similarities are inescapable. And clearly, the writer wants you to know that there's a choice. I'm not going to read the list of bad things. You can see that. Badness is chosen, but it's not chosen for everybody. And those people who choose it are outside. That's on the other side of the butt. On this side, the tree of life is there. On this side is the water that springs up to eternal life. Do you? Everybody's needs are different. I understand that. But I like to be able to look ahead and say, there's something in front of me that's worth waiting for. There's something that's I can anticipate. There's something that says what I'm enduring right now is okay, because it takes its place underneath that which is bigger and better and godly. I find encouragement in that, and I hope you, once again, I don't want to read the list. You can look at it if you want to. Maybe we do need to think about that. But I want to think about the water, the spring. And I want to think about the tree and the fruit and the leaves and the healing. It's there, waiting for us. I hope you know, now this is a little bit odd because it seems like it's in association with the city. But you can't start hearing about trees and rivers and fruit without thinking that sounds a lot like a garden, too. Right? So in a sense, here at the end, in chapters 21 and 22, with this new Jerusalem coming down twice, or at least being shown to him twice, it seems, if I'm reading it rightly, there's also this garden talk. And so I suggest to you, and for me, this is astonishing encouragement, something that Jeff and Brent have been teaching me recently in just the last very few years. What we have before us is the world as it's intended to be. We're given, please notice, I didn't even read the description of the city, mostly because I didn't want to try to pronounce those rocks. I needed John Parsons' help to pronounce all of those. But I don't need to get caught up in that description and get lost in the walls and the measuring rod. Those are useful. We know that connects back to language in Ezekiel, I'm sure other places in the Old Testament, with measuring rods and angels. But it is, you see, it's a picturing of God's restoration of the world as it's intended to be. I'm encouraged by that. I want to see that big picture. In fact, I want to suggest this to you by talking about a strange word in from Genesis. Most of us know that on the seventh day, God rested. Well, I want to work that word a bit with you. I may be pushing it too far, and I'll be glad to be challenged later, and I'm not trying to deny or discount its current sense, but I think we rest too easily and readily in a reductive understanding of that word. God needed a day off. God needed a justification for a nap. Is that what we're talking about? Well, I don't want to, again, I'm not trying to discount our what I take to be a common understanding of that word, but I want to suggest to you that we might have an enlarged sense of the rest of God. And the way I want to think about it, I want to think about it with rest, but I want to tie it into something else. Think about this. Some of you, I'm sure, are big project doers. Just imagine yourself building a spa or a swimming pool some kind of nice patio arrangement. And you build this setting, you build this place, and when you're through, you're glad to rest. And you probably want some iced tea, don't you? Of course you do. We're in Texas. But your rest may mean a cessation of work, but it also means you want to enjoy what you've created. So you do sit down and you stop work, but you sit down in the spa. You sit down in the shallow end of the pool or on a floaty, a rather large floaty. Or you sit on the patio and you lounge. You are resting, but you are resting in the pleasure of your creation, in the fullness of your creation, in the enactment of your creation. Now, again, I may be pushing the word too much, and we've certainly got people who will correct me, and I've been corrected before. But I want to think that to some extent, one way that I could walk out of here encouraged tonight is to be reminded that God has a spa planned. I shouldn't say that. That's okay. It's not a spa. That was just a metaphor. God has an order. God has a way, He has a world, He has a life planned for us. And we get to look forward to being part of it. And it's not, I'm not sure the language of going up to heaven quite does justice to that. And I'm not sure Again, I'm not questioning the descriptions here of Jerusalem and streets of gold kind of things that we have in songs, and not questioning that. I don't know what to make of that. But I do think that this passage is teaching us, and that's one reason we ought to read this passage again and again, so we see that there is a rest coming. There is the new Jerusalem. There is a new heaven. There is a new earth. And we get to join in with God. And the last pairing shows us that. And that's what I want to turn to now. But I will remind you, this is another reference outside of the end of Revelation. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, there's language there where Paul says, our bodies groan, waiting to put on heavenly bodies. And it's not that we want to be unclothed. We want to be more clothed. And here's the language that I'm ruminating over. He says, the mortal will be swallowed up by life. You understand that what I think is happening here in some kind of visionary way, some kind of image array, John has been given a revelation of what real life looks like. That's what he's been given. And let's see what that looks like. Let's go back to chapter 21 where I started reading. You remember in chapter 21 and verse 2, I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride. See, already we're having to work a little bit. Remember, what's the bride? Well, the church is the bride in the New Testament as well. It's a figure. But here it is, the New Jerusalem is prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice. Look at and listen to this. The dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. I want everybody in here to get those words into your head. I want you to practice them all the time. Here, this is the story. God says, and notice there's kind of a sandwiching of this. First thing, he will dwell with them. And then at the end of that same part there, this is in verse 3, God himself will be with them. So twice the presence of God is talked about. And notice this. So really three things here. They will be his people, he will be their God, and he will be with them. If you can't walk out of here tonight encouraged by that, then let's talk. God says, and he says this is one of the most insistent declarations throughout the Bible. God says it again and again and again. One place I'll mention in the Old Testament, you can look there, check for others, Jeremiah 31, 33, I believe, right near the reference in 31 to the New Covenant. This same language is used, or essentially the same language is used, and it's again and again and again. The Bible says these three things. This is what's astonishing. God says, I want a people. He wants us. He's going to have a people. The question is, who will be in it? He's going to sort. And you could be in the lake of fire. You could be on the outside. You could be on the other side of the butt. If you choose, but he's going to have a people. And we have every reason to believe that we can be part of God's people. He wants it. He wants to have a people, and he wants to be their God. Be encouraged by that. And it's in this context where his people are going to have their tears wiped away, and the mourning's going to disappear, the pain's going to be gone, and the former things that passed away, all of that is tied into being among his people. I want to read the end of Revelation because I want to see that God is presenting to us at the end what he presented to us at the beginning. I want to have a place. I want to have a people. And I want to be their God. Just to emphasize this, it's repeated with a variation, and that's what I want to see moving on a little further. This is back where the first Alpha and Omega was, chapter 21, verse 6, where I read before. He said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage," and listen to it, "I will be his God, and he will be my son." See, within just a few verses, he repeats himself with a variation. Do you notice the similarity? The structure of the language? But then the variation. Yes? The variation is this time, and I don't know of another time in the Bible where this formulation is used. And it may be, and I don't know about it. But the one where "I will have a people," that's throughout. But here he says, "He will be my son." And it's individual. And now that's a fascinating recognition. This is something that, again, we've been taught about. Brent, especially recently, has taught us a number of different times, made reference to the contrast between the singular you and the plural you, and we need to correct our thinking and understand that sometimes we're talking about a people and it's not just individual, but it is individual. So no one is denying individual accountability, individual decision, individual responsibility. It's here, individual opportunity, that you get to be one of God's people if you choose. Notice the language, and this is the word. And when I teach Revelation to people, the one word that is all of Revelation. If you want to reduce it to a word, of course, we would never be so reductive. It is the word conquer here, overcome in other translations. The one who conquers, he's going to be my son. The lamb conquers. 17:14, "These shall war against the lamb, and the lamb shall conquer them, because he's Lord of lords and King of kings." It's not only the lamb that conquers. It is his people who conquer. It is his son who conquers. And you can be that, if you will. You can be that. But you don't have to be. That's where your choice comes in. And I think there's some room to explore this. Remember, I think I mentioned to you before, then each of the letters begins to the church. Seven churches. But each of the letters also ends to him who conquers. So the letters, kind of, there's a movement from addressing the whole church to addressing individuals. And I think we could be braced by the challenge to understand that we're in this together, but we're also in it on our own. And there is encouragement to be had from knowing these three things, at least, from the very end of Revelation. Knowing that even the Bible writers mess up and are willing to fall down and worship just anybody that speaks and talks, if you give them a fancy enough picture. He's corrected. We can succumb too. We can be corrected and be reminded. We can remind one another. Worship God. We can also be braced by knowing there is a sort coming. Some people sorted one way, some another. But we can be encouraged to know that if we choose well, the water and the tree await us. Do you want that water? Do you want that tree? I do. Look for them. When you do decide you want them, then what you're saying is, I want to be one of his people. I want to be in that number that are talked about here in the early, in chapter 21 of Revelation. They will be his people, and he will be their God. Notice in the imagery, and if I took more time to explore this, we could certainly benefit, I'm sure, but I'll at least mention it. In this astonishing setting that John has shown, that's revealed to him, there is no temple. There is no light other than the source, God and the Lamb. Remember in Exodus when the tabernacle is finished at the end of Exodus, the glory of God fills the tabernacle. In this new Jerusalem, the glory of God, the glory of the throne sitter and the Lamb who sits beside him on the throne. The double throne is mentioned here in 22. They, right? That's why we sing the song, right? There is no night there. Because the glory of the world maker has been realized in its place, the new Jerusalem. If you think I've said something weird, please help me, talk to me, teach me. But I think I'm reading what's right here in front of us, repeated, in fact, as I've shown you, with help from you in finding it. This is the repeated language of the one who has the revelation. You can be different if you know the one who makes a difference. You can have hope. You can look forward to a better day tomorrow because you know there's a better day to come. There is a new Jerusalem that doesn't need a temple. There is a new Jerusalem that needs no sun. There is a new Jerusalem that will be filled with water seekers and tree seekers who will have the healing of the nations. Most of us have already declared our intention to be among his people. Help us. Help us to see well so that we can remember where we're headed and what's required to get there. The big sort's coming. And let's make the right side of the butt. But it's not only the big sort that's coming. The water's coming and the tree. Let's encourage one another because we are the people together before God. Let's also encourage one another because we are individuals accountable before God. And there may be tonight an individual accountable before God who has not yet laid hold of the hope of the water or the tree. The way you do that is to say, I believe that the Lamb has already conquered. I believe that God has done the work to make a people, and he'll finish that work. And when he does, I want to be there. So if you'll stand up in front of people tonight and say you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, then you're ready to start. And the next part of that is to determine to turn from your sin and to be ritually buried in baptism, dunked under the water, so that you can rise to walk in newness of life. And when you do, when you come up wet, That's just a reminder, one, of the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus. But let it also be a reminder that there's more water waiting. The water promised to those who are thirsty and promised without payment to those who will choose well. Tonight, let us together choose as a people to be more resolved to be the people of God and to be dwelling makers for Him. Let Him dwell in us until New Jerusalem. If you need to come tonight, please do so in just one moment. If you don't need to come publicly, I can imagine that we all need privately to ponder these things and find the bracing challenge and the encouraging hope that await us. As you need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.